An excerpt from Overlords of the Iron Dragon by C.L. Werner, read by John Banks. The sorcerer's face curled back in a leering rictus, exposing the blackened stumps of bone hidden behind his lips. There was something almost batrachian in his visage, bulbous eyes jutting from puffy folds of skin. Unlike the flesh around them, there was no softness in Coram's toad-like eyes, only a rapacious hunger as they stared both outwards and inwards. Possibilities and potentialities, the twistings of doom and fate, the shadows of futures yet unmade, scenes of glorious victory and visions of annihilating disaster, each waxing and waning like the falling sands of time. The ebb and flow of prophecy was unrelenting and unforgiving. The weak of mind were consumed by the ordeal of divining insight from the tide of omen and portent, driven mad by their inability to confine such knowledge into purely mundane perceptions. The weak of spirit lost themselves in the cosmic expanse of the infinite, flesh and soul obliterated as they surrendered to the cyclopean enormity where past and future united into a single moment that defied the mortal conceit of time. Humanity had been the first and least of the sacrifices Coram had rendered to his black arts. The sorcerer was a tall man, his body disfigured by the manifold blessings thrust upon him by his dread god. Grossly mutated, his robes and armour folded awkwardly about his frame. The side of his neck bulged with a hideous feathered growth, pushing his head down towards the opposite shoulder. One hand, the less malformed of his extremities, gripped a long staff. The other hand, ending in elongated, boneless digits, beckoned to the fist-sized sphere of glass that hovered around his head. At his summons, the sphere came to rest, floating just before his eyes. Wind rippled the sorcerer's robes, disturbing the feathers of the growth on his neck. The beast upon which he stood shuddered, shifting slightly as it adjusted its flight through the darkling skies, high above the bleak hills of Shadowfar. The sorcerer's boots were gripped by hairy tendrils that emerged from the creature's back, melded into its very substance. The flattened, ray-like demon could no more divorce itself of its rider than it could shed its own organs. Its corporeal form had become subsumed by Coram, existing as an extension of his own. Through the skies of Chamon it would carry him until such time as it was dismissed and its physical mass dissolved into vapour. There would always be another demon ready to enter the mortal realms to replace it when the sorcerer was in need. Coram's wormy fingers reached out and curled around the scintillating sphere, little ribbons of steam rising where his cobalt-hued skin rested against the glassy surface. Even flesh that had been transformed by the blessings of mighty Tzeentch wasn't immune to the corrosive touch of temporal abeyance.
"Mighty is your power, O Orb of Zobras," Coram hissed to the gleaming sphere. "You are prophecy manifest, prediction given physical form."
He felt the heat in his fingers gradually lessen. The sorcerer thought of the great seer who had created the orb.
"Zobras sacrificed much to achieve you," he told the relic. "At the height of his power, he commanded demons to forge you from the essence of time and dream. You are the pinnacle of his magic."
The flattery spilled off Coram's tongue, tasting bitter in his mouth. By arduous rite and obscene ritual, the sphere had been soul-bound to him, orbiting him like a captive star. To command the orb was never enough, however. It had to be appeased. Zobras had ignored the will of the relic he had created, and in the end it had betrayed him when the armies of chaos laid waste to his theocracy. The prophet's ruin was a warning, a reminder to remain humble before the dark gods.
"Reveal to me the path of things yet to become,"
Coram enjoined the orb. He stared into the sphere, peering into its thousands of facets. Each one bore its own story, its own interpretation of how the future would unfold. Trying to concentrate upon all of them would be futile, an effort that had driven lesser sorcerers mad. Khorram, however, had received one blessing from his god that made all the difference.
There! There!
The words sounded from the feathered growth on Khorram's neck. A tiny face peered out from the midst of the feathers, clusters of black eyes fixated upon the orb's planes.
There!
The homunculus repeated. Khorram diverted his attention from the images his parasitic demon had rejected. He depended upon the creature's guidance to lead him to the most propitious of the visions. A connoisseur of lies, the Trechlay unerringly sniffed out the truth for its master. The sorcerer's eyes gleamed as his familiar drew his attention to the image playing out within one of the facets. The moment he focused upon the image and his mind digested the scene, the other surfaces around it changed. Now they exhibited a new array of futures, possibilities derived from the initial prediction. Again, Khorram felt the Trechlay guiding him to the most truthful of the prophecies. Mustering his resolve, he tore his gaze away from the orb. It was unwise to peer too far ahead at one time. Therein lay the root of obsession and the madness of infinity. Looking away from the orb, Khorram gazed out across the cloud-swept skies. Ugly fogs of scintillating amber cascaded through the atmosphere, thrown aloft by the forests of spite pine that infested the hills far below. Buzzing swarms of tiny blot midges flocked to the amber, greedily glutting themselves on the shimmering motes of hardened sap. Those that fed too lustily became weighted down by their feast, crashing onto the slopes below, their carcasses fertilizing the very trees that provoked their downfall. The flux of change in action, from benefactor to exploiter, from predator to prey. The role played one moment was but a mask that could swiftly be torn away, either by expedience or by the whims of fate. Khorram's left hand closed tighter about the walled runestaff he held. Glancing down at the demon upon which he stood, the sorcerer drove the spiked butt of the implement into one of the scarred grooves that circled the creature's forward edge. The disc-shaped thing snarled in irritation as the goad jabbed at it. Wormy tendrils tried to writhe up from underneath the demon's body, but their reach was incapable of threatening the mortal on its back. The creature let out another snarl, the shudder of its annoyance shivering through its substance up into Khorram's feet. The circular demon floated upwards, racing towards the height to which its master directed it. The roar of battle crashed upon the sorcerer's ears. The skies below him were filled with conflict. Savage warriors draped in kilts of sapphire and malachite soared through the air on demonic charges, similar to the one Khorram rode. Fiery chariots harnessed to still larger demons careened across the atmosphere, trailing plumes of smoke and flame in their wake. Bird-faced half-men glided about the fray, borne aloft upon shrieking demon steeds, and loosing arrows of bone from bows cut from the tendons of gargants. The war host of men and monsters spiraled around a clutch of fantastical craft. Great ships soared over Shadowfar, supported by metal cupolas suspended above their decks. From prow and stern, each ship directed an array of weaponry against their tormentors. Beams of golden light streaked out at masked warriors, punching through their flesh as they solidified into bullets just before reaching their targets. Harpoons rocketed away from cylindrical launchers fixed to the decks, the spears impaling howling beastmen, leaving them dangling against the keel, until the chains fitted to the projectile were reeled back in. From the decks, from armoured baskets fastened to the cupolas and the sides of the hulls themselves, the crew of the sky vessels directed a determined defence. Pistols belched shot into the very faces of the attackers. Larger, snub-nosed weapons spewed blasts that shredded the wings of beastmen and scoured the hides of demons. Axes and pikes were employed to deadly effect, hacking through the beaked faces of the monstrous raiders or plucking warriors from the backs of their steeds to send them plummeting to the earth far below.
"How unfit for the storm are our foes,"
Khorram mused, the Trechlay gibbering in agreement. The crews of the sky vessels were utterly unlike their vicious foes. They were shorter and stockier, broadly and stolidly built. Most wore bulky armour of heavy metal plates, their faces locked inside helms with glowering masks and golden beards.
They lack the grace and agility of those born to the skies, brutes of rock and stone that seek to conquer the tempest with their puerile inventions.
The sorcerer shook his head.
The Duwadin are a meddlesome breed. Whatever the peculiarities of their creed, they invariably demand great effort to dispose of, more effort than some are willing to expend.
As the thought came to him, Khurram gazed back into the orb. Responding to his mind, the facets shimmered and displayed a new array of images. Each facet displayed the same chaos warrior standing upon the back of a demonic disc. He presented a gruesome aspect, his baroque armor still dripping with the sacrificial blood used to anoint it before the fighting. Dismembered fingers dipped in wax were plastered about his gorget like hideous candles. Veiled by the smoke rising from the smouldering fingers, his horned helm was an indistinct suggestion of shape and motion. Only the 9 eyes that stared from the jumble of visors scattered across the helm's face exhibited any clarity, shining through the smoke like angry embers.
"Tammuz is in a particularly wrathful humor,"
Khurram told his homunculus. As he watched, an armored Duwadin defending the bow of one of the ships jabbed at the warlord's demon steed with a pike, ripping into its mottled hide. Tammuz brought the fiery blade of the glaive he bore crunching down into the Duwadin's head. Even as the enchanted blade bit through iron helm and bony skull, Tammuz pressed the attack, not relenting until he had cleft the enemy from pate to palate.
"Losing so many of his followers in the fighting has upset him," Khurram stated. "For all the blessings mighty Tzeentch has seen fit to bestow on him, Tammuz still reckons power in tired old conceits of mortal rule and domination."
Seen in the facets of the orb, Tammuz ripped his glaive free and sent the body of the slaughtered Duwadin hurtling over the side of the ship. The warlord sought another foe, but even as he did, Khurram sent a tendril of magic rippling through the orb to reach into Tammuz's mind.
"Come to me,"
Khurram hissed, his homunculus echoing the words in a greasy titter.
"Come to me."
He was careful to invest the summons with more suggestion than command. Too overt a touch would rouse Tammuz's resistance, and Khurram knew from past experience that the warlord's will was strong enough to defy his magic if he was aware of its influence.
"Set the thought in his head. Let Tammuz think it is of his own volition, and there is little he will not do,"
Khurram boasted to his Treachley. The demonic parasite whined, reminding his master that his boast wasn't entirely true. The dark spectre of the warlord came speeding away from the battle, a thin slick of ichor seeping from the injured demon that supported him, leaving a greasy smear in his wake.
"My slaves perish, cursling," Tammuz hissed at Khurram as he soared towards the sorcerer.
"Mighty Tzeentch demands payment," Khurram replied. "The changer does not favor slaves."
Tammuz shook the massive glaive he bore, the arcane energies bound within it causing a flicker of power to coruscate along the blade.
"Spare me your philosophy. You promised me the sky vessels. Bring them down."
Khurram cocked his head to one side, staring past Tammuz to watch the battle over the warlord's shoulder. He saw one of the warlord's adepts pitch from the back of his demon steed when a Duwadin shot him in the face.
"They will fall," Khurram said. "But they will fall when it is propitious to a greater purpose, the purpose to which we both strive."
The flash of arcane energy faded from the warlord's glaive. The smouldering eyes lost their luster, almost seeming to pull the veiling smoke tighter around them.
"I have not forgotten," Tammuz replied. "Then let us do what is needed of us,"
Khurram said. He waved his snaky fingers away towards the horizon.
"We must harry them still further away from Shadowfar, the next valley. That is where their doom will come."
The sorcerer nodded at the orb circling him.
Such is the prophecy that guides us.
I will lose more warriors, Tammuz objected, some of the edge creeping back into his tone.
You will gain more glorious, Tammuz, Khorram insisted. Through me, you will be at the right hand of power.
Grokmund Wodinson watched from midship as carnage waxed and waned all around him. The gold fillings in his teeth felt as though lightning were racing through them, an impression that had always presaged some disaster. The last time he'd felt that unpleasant tingling in his teeth was when Lodric Kodraksim had challenged him to a drinking contest, and he lost his stake in a most profitable voyage. What he felt now was far worse. Grokmund thought if he champed his teeth, sparks might fly out, so fierce was the sensation. Was it because of greater danger, or because he had more to lose this time? He glanced at the deck beneath his feet, picturing the box locked away in his cabin below. The ether chemist's tests had given every indication that this find would make all their fortunes, would expand the wealth of Barak Obaz 100-fold. If Grokmund was right, this venture would mean more than riches. It would mean fame and glory. The mightiest Duardin in the Skyhold would regard them with honour. Grokmund ducked down as a demon-riding cultist flew above the Stormbreaker's deck. As the brawny human passed, he brought a heavy mace swinging at the ether chemist. The bludgeon struck sparks from the Duardin's helm, but failed to deal any greater damage. As the enemy soared away, he was struck from behind by the rifle fire of a Grunstock Thunderer. The cultist sagged across the disc-like demon, borne away as the creature flew onwards. Grokmund rose slowly, shaken by the nearness of his escape. Mutant beastkin darted around the ships of Admiral Thorki's fleet like megalophin pups in a school of sungills. The Caradhron defenders sent volley upon volley into the raiders, felling some but leaving far too many to press the attack. Swooping from below the hulls of the frigates and gun haulers, diving down from on high to slash at the great endrins that kept the vessels aloft, the ambushers were taking a slow but steady toll upon the Caradhron. Lifeless skyriggers drifted away from the fleet, the small ether endrins fitted to their backs, keeping them airborne until at last their fuel would run out and bring them sinking earthwards. Some of the Sky Wardens who'd attached cables to the frigates now dangled from the sides of the ships, their ether endrins damaged, their bodies clanging incessantly against the iron-plated hulls.
"You'll lose your head that way,"
Admiral Thorki reproved Grokmund as he helped him back to his feet. Encased in a heavy suit of ether-powered armor, Thorki was easily able to lift Grokmund with one hand, while his other aimed a volley pistol at the raiders. He sent a bullet smashing into the beaked face of a beastman as it came whipping towards the ironclad's endrin. The maimed creature dropped its bow and pawed at the gory wreck of its face before vanishing into the distance.
"I have to do my part," Grokmund told Thorki. "Protecting the find is all that matters now."
Thorki shook his head.
"We need you to make certain of our claim and secure full rights to the find."
Despite their magnetized boots, both Duardin felt the deck beneath them tremble as ether-shot carbines mounted in the hull plastered the attackers with a withering volley. Around them, Grunstock Thunderers blasted away at the raiders with their rifles and mortars, trying to keep the attackers from swarming the ironclad's decks.
"Get below," Thorki told the ether chemist.
Grokmund remained where he was.
"If the ship falls, it won't matter anyway," he said. "I'd prefer to die fighting than hiding down in the hold."
Thorki conceded the point grudgingly.
"If you get yourself killed, our backers will shave my beard," he snapped.
The admiral swung around, shouting commands to the gunners up on the forecastle. He gestured with his pistol towards a pack of bird-faced beastkin that were flying at the ship from starboard.
"Audrey, bring them down!"
At Thorki's command, the gunners swung around the great volley cannon bolted to the roof of the forecastle. The whole ship shook as they fired the weapon. Caught in the explosive discharge, the center of the oncoming pack was shredded, demons and beastmen alike plummeting from the sky. Arcanauts rushed to the gunwales, picking off mangled survivors with their pistols.
"We're winning!" Grockman shouted.
The very next instant, he felt a withering heat smash against his face. Visions of glory evaporated as a spout of sorcerer's fire splashed against the side of the ship, immolating the Arcanauts that had been picking off wounded beastmen. Behind the flames came a sinister chariot drawn by slavering demons. Standing in the chariot, seemingly growing up from its bed, was a foul fungoid thing with stumpy arms that sprayed jets of shimmering orange fire. An Arcanaut sprinting past Grockmund was caught in the flames, flailing about wildly as the demonic fire clung to him and gnawed greedily at his armor. Another Arcanaut tried to help his comrade smother the flames, only to have the fire leap eagerly to his gauntlet, bubbling and sizzling as the metal began to melt. Grockmund hastened to the stricken Arcanauts, gesturing to Thorki to hold back.
"Keep everyone away!" he warned the Admiral.
Closing upon the fire-wrapped Duardin, Grockmund employed his anatomizer, drawing out the air from his immediate surroundings. The demon fire had little kinship with natural flame, but even it couldn't withstand the resulting vacuum. In a heartbeat, the ghastly fires were snuffed out. The Arcanaut, whose gauntlet had been afflicted, staggered around, befuddled by the anatomizer's effects. His comrade was little more than a charred smear on the deck. The injured Duardin ripped away his mangled gauntlet and flexed his fingers, ensuring they could still hold a weapon, before trusting his pistol to them again.
"Profit to you, Master Grockmund,"
he thanked the ether chemist, his voice distorted by the breathing mask fitted to his helm. His eyes narrowed as he stared at the sky.
"I'd pay 10 weight in gold if that murdering scum would come in range of my gun."
"Let me see where it has gone," Grockmund said.
The enhanced array of lenses on his helm made it possible to succeed in his purpose. The discordant pattern of splotches and blemishes that marked the stalk of the fungoid fire sprayer was distinct enough to recognize again. Grockmund saw it diving for one of the frigates, again letting its demonic flame splash across the decks and harry the crew. The long-suffering frigate could do little to repel the monster, so depleted had the ship's crew become. Yet the chariot made only one attack. It didn't linger to press its advantage or remain to vanquish its enemy. Instead, it went speeding away to assault a gunhauler and then to turn upon another frigate. A suspicion grew in Grockman's gut. He swung around to Thorki.
"The Chaos scum are up to something," he declared.
Carefully, he picked out another of the attackers, a bird-faced beastkin loosing shimmering arrows at the sky vessels. He watched it fly past one of the frigates, then duck away to come at the Stormbreaker. An arrow sizzled against the plated hull, then the creature was wheeling away again, seeking out a new target.
"They aren't pressing their attacks," Grockman told Thorki.
He quickly pointed to the almost crewless frigate.
"They aren't seizing advantage when they gain it." "Sky devils eat their bones," Thorki grumbled.
He raised the spyglass to his eye, watching as the raiders displayed more coordination than he had considered them capable of.
"They've some design in mind, deliberately wearing us down."
A fierce war cry brought the two Duardins spinning around. Grockmund pulled back just as a half-naked cultist came diving down at him upon a demonic disc. The man slashed at him with a crooked blade, the serrated edge biting into the blue-green steel covering his shoulder. The impact sent Grockmund staggering back a pace. Before the masked human could strike at him again, he raised his atmospheric anatomizer and pressed its actuation rune. This time, instead of drawing in the air, the mechanism expelled a plume of virulent gas. The cultist raised his heavy shield to block the blast of the noxious ether, but the vapor simply billowed over its edges. The man shrieked as the gas seared his face. Racked with pain, he fell from his demonic steed onto the ironclad's deck. The demonic disc flew away, unconcerned by the fate of its late rider. Thorki fired his volley pistol at another of the cultists, preventing the man from aiding his stricken companion. Bullets ripped into the demonic steed as its rider sent it rearing back to absorb the shots. Then the man was leaping down, slashing at the admiral with a crooked blade. Grockmund moved towards the foe he had knocked to the deck. He unlatched the heavy hammer from his tool belt and stalked after the fallen cultist. The man was clawing at his face, struggling to remove the beaked mask he wore. He had it free just in time to see Grockmund's hammer swinging at his face. A crunching impact spilled the man back to the deck, a mash of brains and bone dripping from the Duardin's hammer. Before Grockmund's shocked gaze, the corpse twitched and writhed, its contours shrinking and shriveling. The warrior he'd struck down had been powerfully built, in the prime of condition for a human. The corpse at his feet was that of an old man, wrinkled and wasted. Only the swirling tattoo across his chest proclaimed that this was indeed the same foe. Grockmund touched his thumb to the face of the steel girdle he wore, pressing against the forehead of the revered ancestor moulded across it. Such repulsive sorcery was disturbing, even to an ether chemist. As Grockmund turned from his fallen foe, Thorki was just settling his own adversary. The admiral's gauntlet was around the cultist's neck. With a brutal clenching of his fist, Thorki crushed the man's throat. He tossed the twitching body to the deck and swung around.
"It would seem they've tired of their strategy, just as we suspected," Thorki said.
The admiral sprinted towards the forecastle, shouting orders to Udri and the gunners.
"Fire wherever they bunch up! Break their resolve!"
The men who had attacked Grockmund and Thorki were not alone. They were part of a renewed surge of enemies, a universal increase of ferocity. The enemy now pressed home their assaults, no longer content to harass, to strike and run as they had before. Gun haulers went down with all hands as flying leech-like demons latched onto their endrins and compromised their integrity, rupturing fuel lines and reservoirs to send jets of ether spilling into the atmosphere. Skyriggers were shot down by the arrows of beastmen, struck again and again by the piercing shafts. One frigate had its prow turned into a conflagration as three chariots concentrated their attacks against it, the fungoid demon riders loosing blast after blast of eerie flame at the ship. Grockmund fended off the attack of a charging beastman, managing to break one of the rope-like feelers of its disc steed as the creature retreated. He could see the Endrin riggers hovering overhead, trying to keep the attackers away from the tanks of the Endrin above the ironclad's deck. They spun away, attacking with their rivet guns and saw blades, lashing out with the tools they used to repair the ship in order to defend it. The ironclad's captain was likewise doing his best to protect the ship. Since the attack had begun, the Stormbreaker had been pushed to top speed, striving to pull away from the foes. An uncanny headwind had defied them, retarding their efforts at escape. Having spotted a method to the attack, Grockmund now wondered about that stubborn gale. The fleet had turned in the direction of least resistance in trying to escape the attack. Until these last moments, the slaves of Chaos had been content simply to harass the fleet. Now they pressed the attack with unrestrained malice. Why, Grockmund asked himself, unless the reason for such restraint had passed? Like the wind, the enemy had been trying to steer them, lead them to some point they wanted the Caradron to be. The nauseating image of ripper bats herding prey into the waiting fangs of their colonies filled his mind. Grockmund turned from the fray, unfolding about the ironclad's port side, hurrying towards the forecastle to alert Thorki of their danger.
"They are herding us into a killing ground," he shouted to the admiral.
Thorki was just climbing the ladder up to the forecastle when he heard Grockmund calling to him. He looked back, puzzlement in his eyes.
"They are trying to drive us into a trap," Grockmund declared. "That is why they press their attack now." "We can outrun them," Thorki stated. "That is the best way to reduce our losses."
Grockmund shook his head, waving his fist in the air.
"Don't you see? This hellish wind is conjured by their sorcery. It pushes us where they want us to go. Their attack is simply to force us to stay the course."
Thorki paused in his climb.
"The only other choice would be to smash our way through them. That would cost us too much to accomplish." "Risk some to save the rest," Grockmund advised. "Trying to save everything might bring the whole fleet to ruin."
Thorki turned his head, looking across the embattled ships of his fleet.
"We have lost too much already," he said, his tone almost accusing. "If my box does not make it back to Barak Urbaz, then their deaths count for nothing anyway," Grokman snapped.
He had to get Thorki to appreciate their peril. Only the Admiral had the authority to command the fleet and turn them around before it was too late. Before Grokman could press his point, a ghastly figure swooped down upon the forecastle. A huge man clad in armour and wearing a tall helm topped with spiralling horns, his face hidden in a murk of smoke. The flying demon he was riding sank its jaws around the head of Udri, who was loading the volley cannon. Even as the gun commander fell, the demon's rider lashed out with a fiery glaive he bore, the red-hot edge shearing through armour and bone to leave another gunner mangled at his feet. Admiral Thorki lunged up the ladder and charged at the Chaos Butcher. His volley pistol barked, sending blasts of etheric shot streaking at his enemy. Arcane runes flared outwards from the shield the barbarous foeman carried, each sigil surrounding one of the shots and snuffing it out entirely. The warlord's glaive caught the upward sweep of the Admiral's immense hammer as Thorki tried to press his attack.
"Thorki!" Grokman
cried as he sprang for the ladder. But before he could help the Admiral, he found himself beset by an adversary of his own. A hideously mutated man suddenly appeared between himself and the ladder. Arrayed in armour, seemingly moulded from molten sapphire and crushed malachite, the human stood a head taller than the Dwadin. An obscene growth protruded from his neck, bloated and feathered. The growth's head rested against the smooth helm that covered that of his host.
"It is the fool who would hurry his doom," the man declared.
To Grokmund, it seemed he heard the words not with his ears, but more as though they were thrust directly into his brain.
"All things come into season, even death."
The sorcerer raised the gnarled staff he carried. The riot of talismans and charms chained to his jeweled head clattered wildly as he harnessed their powers. Grokmund raised his anatomizer, thinking to spray the sorcerer with corrosive ether before he could work his magic. He was depending upon the stifling qualities of his own ether-powered equipment to at least partly impede whatever spell the warlock hurled against him. In this, however, he again underestimated the craft and cunning of the enemy. It wasn't against the ether chemist that the sorcerer directed his magic, but the deck beneath his feet. A coruscating spiral of crackling light spilled across the floor, undulating with a monstrous animation as it seeped into the wood and iron. The violent swirl of energy crackled through the planks. Before Grokmund could react, the deck under him shuddered open, gaping wide like a waiting maw. Like a plummeting stone, he was sent crashing down into the darkened hold below. His last view of the battle was the sorcerer and his parasite staring down at him from above. That was Overlords of the Iron Dragon, an excerpt by C.L. Werner, read by John Banks.